This is Corolla Digital. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah. All right. Gary Anthony Williams is our guest today.
Feels good to be here, Adam.
Good to have you. Take it away, Drew.
Oh, good. Excellent. Yeah, I've been dealing with a lot of crap lately. My son got sick, and Adam has given me shit for attending to it. So
I'm sorry
I seemed a little distracted. But
I have a son, and if he got sick,
he would freak you out, right?
No, not at all.
Right, yeah. But Drew, what about every other show where you come in here with your phone and Twitter all day?
You may not, wait, I'm taking over.
With your son not sick.
Adam does this thing where he takes his hands off the wheel.
Yeah.
If you know, he wants to do something, if he wants you to do something, and you seem not as attentive or compliant with his way of doing things, just takes the hands off the wheel. Goes, all right, you drive.
Wow.
You drive. Yeah. It gets scary sometimes.
No, I get it. How
gets a little scary.
How sick is your son? What's up?
Well, we were trying to figure it out. He's been sick for like a month.
Dude.
And he's 20, so it's good. And he's got a girlfriend that's taking care of him, so it's been
okay.
That's been good. He doesn't care as much about his parents as he does about his peers in college. How's your son?
My son's 10. And yeah, man, they make you worry. They make you worry about everything. Like, will they have enough friends?
Right.
How well is he too smart? You know what I mean?
How many kids you have?
That's it.
Just one son.
That's all I had in me. Well, my sperm is still very young, but my wife's eggs are old.
Are you?
So
it's her fault.
Yeah.
Are you an anxious parent?
What do you mean by that?
Well, it sounds like you're like me. You worry about everything with him. Is he smart enough? Is he too smart?
I have not slept well since he was born.
Yeah.
That's
true. You got to set up the guests. You got to let him. You got to know who he is, what he's doing, what's coming up.
Okay, good. But let me just first get the parenting thing out of the way. I'm like you, and so when he gets sick, you can imagine this kid's. I've been through it like five times with him with really serious illnesses.
Wow.
It's weird. I keep thinking, okay, he's been through it now. It's over. It's the end of it. And we keep having, and the other one's never a problem. I have three. This one, constant.
Wow.
Anxiety is not something Adam can relate to. He cannot understand.
He's made
of steel, man. The guy is icy cold when it comes to anxiety. He sees everything very clear.
Yeah.
Those of us are stuck with bodies and emotions are really at a handicap.
I like to think of myself as very zen. You know, I can repulse the monkey. I can let things go the other way. But when it comes to him, no, like definitely. It's just that thing of I don't know when I'm going to die and I need this little dude to be ready. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
He needs to be ready
for anxiety.
The world. That's it.
It's catastrophizing. We're talking to Gary Anthony Williams. Of course, you know him from Weeds, Boston Legal, Malcolm in the Middle.
So much.
Yeah.
Just
yeah. He
young
was
star.
He was destined for thoracic surgery until a computer error accidentally signed him up for drama class in high school.
That is
surgery or surgeon?
Well, to be a thoracic surgeon. Thoracic surgery as a field. He will be at the L.A. Comedy Short Film. Oh, you're co-founder of the L.A. Comedy Short Film.
Yeah, I started it.
That is April 4th, Sunday through April 7th. Who else will be there? Paul Rodriguez?
You mean just people? Yeah. Like a bunch of my buddies will be there, like Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly, Paul Rodriguez, Sherry O'Terry, Wendy McClendon Covey from Bridesmaids. There's a lot of famous, funny, recognizable people. Then there's just regular Joes who have some great short films.
Where is it?
It's at the Downtown Independent Theater.
It is. You can find out more about it at lacomedyshorts.com. The website is lacomedyshorts.com for tickets and whatnot. You're from Atlanta.
Yeah, man.
How'd you end up out here?
I grew up in Fayetteville, Georgia, which was just a horrible place to grow up.
Yeah.
No, Fayetteville's a cool place. And Atlanta's a little north of there.
Yeah.
So I was acting there.
Is there a school there at Fayetteville, like one of the universities?
No. There's a Fayetteville in every place.
Oh,
We do have the oldest courthouse in the state of Georgia, if that means anything to
That's
you.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that means that.
Nothing.
Anyone there.
Yeah.
But no, there's nothing there except some sweet Southern racism still exists now and then.
Again, the son I was telling you about.
They're set in their ways. That's not racism.
Yeah.
It's called set in their ways.
Yeah. They're very set there. In,
the son I'm talking about is in the South at school, and he is like disturbed all the time by the background of racism. It's like you can't – they don't know. It's so much a part of the background.
Yeah.
They don't know it's there. They think it's not there. And it's very – I found him very unsettling for him.
But it's – you know, I mean, growing up there, it's to most black people there, it's more of a joke than anything else. It's not even something that – I remember driving from my little hometown of Fayetteville to Atlanta, and the Klan would be on the side of the street passing out pamphlets.
That's
you know?
A joke?
Yeah, and we would just grab a pamphlet. Like, what are they going to do? You know what I mean? Like, to them, they seem scary. To us, they seem like
idiots.
Fucking idiots yeah. wearing some very – nicely laundered linens right now.
But sometimes those fucking idiots are aligned with Aryan supremacy sure. groups that are really... I mean, sure. what's going on in Texas right now yeah, is exactly that.
What's going on in Texas?
Their DAs being shot up all over the place, and they think it's the Aryan supremacy. They might be the Aryan supremacist
I
group.
Thought they just let the one guy out of prison early, and he went and shot the DA.
There's all theories all over the place, but the one...
I heard there was a clerical error that let the guy out 4 years early... And then he went and shot up the guy who locked him up?
Maybe, except he's also – there's some association with these Aryan race – Aryan experiments.
Well, I was laughing about it with my buddy Kevin Hench, writing on my next movie, which is – we said, you know, as white guys – Kevin's a real white guy. It sucked to get into prison because we'd have to get swastika tattoos and join the Aryan Nation. Like, you got to join up. You're either with the Mexican lowriders, you're with the Crips or the Bloods, and if you're a white dude, you can't just be ginger-haired Kevin Hench just going, I'm going to be an independent. He'd have to go start pumping iron and get a Hitler tattoo on his back.
But
you'd have to go join in with those dudes.
Are there any white dudes who can pass in prison? You know, like there is.
You know what there is? What there is, because I've been to the prison and the maximum security prison, there is the group of people who aren't going to shank anybody and who have a history of not shanking people who get to white, black, Hispanic, Jewish, and Asian.
It's just a beautiful. Good,
there's no Jews or Asians in there, obviously.
Yeah.
But the point is this.
There's one Jew that nobody knows.
Oh, he's the warden.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is they have a yard for non-troublemakers. And if you want to shoot hoops and you want to play the acoustic guitar and you don't want to get stabbed, then all you have to do is not fight with other inmates and not stab other inmates, and you get to hang out in the nice guy yard.
But I want there to be the heart. I want there to be like a prison wigger, like a prigger. You know what I'm saying? Like he wants to be a black dude and he's in prison, so he hangs
prigger.
Out with
her.
Yeah,
like
I want
that.
A prigger. Is there any priggers up in prison?
I don't know if that's going to work because I think the prison actually is a microcosm of a horrible neighborhood. It's the world's worst neighborhood.
Literally.
It literally
like
is.
If you were to paint, if you were to construct the world's worst neighborhood, that would be it.
Yeah. Now, you know, maybe the south side of Chicago is bad, maybe south central and L.A. is bad, but this is worse. This is nobody. There's no grandmas.
Yeah.
And everyone's a criminal.
Ain't no grandmas.
So,
that's your next book. Ain't no grandmas in prison.
So you take a look at it. You take a look at it this way. You have the worst neighborhood on the planet. And that's called prison. And bad neighborhoods have gangs. And the reason you have to join a gang is for protection.
Yeah.
So you do this horrible cycle thing where it's like, well, that little 12-year-old boy, he didn't want to be a Crip or Blood. But his territory was that. That's where he lived. He had to join up with these guys. He needed protection to get to school, so on and so forth. So prison is basically that. There's no independence in prison. There's no, Rand Paul's in prison.
Right, but then there comes along. Like where I grew up, we were really seriously dirt poor.
That joke works well
in
prison.
And but the, that's one. Uh-huh. Like, it kills in prison. It kills in cell block 10. Mm-hmm. But where I grew up, like the poorer you were, if you were a really poor white dude, you were black. And the really poor white dudes hung out with the black dudes and nobody cared.
Well, you know, I got to say, it's weird because the socioeconomic thing, we do this thing all the time where you are this, but you're really not that. We judge you by your income and by many other things. For instance, you know, it's like, well, OJ's not really black. He lives in Brentwood and he dates a blonde chick.
Yeah, but now you're saying class is what's important.
No, class. This is where we go. Yeah. Kevin James, he ran for mayor here a few weeks back in the election. He was openly gay. It was never discussed. It was, you're not gay, you're Republican. You can't be gay and Republican. Yeah. It was like that way too. Black folk who go Republican, you're not black, you're Republican. Give me a break. And it was weird because I grew up and our richest friend was named Tom Dent. He was black. And he was, his dad was a hand surgeon.
Oh, yeah.
And he lived in one of the biggest houses up in what we call the Hebrew Heights.
Surprised he associated with the likes of you guys. I'm surprised. He had all his Jewish friends. Why did he need you? Oh, so, he thought you the hair.
So he did. He lived in Hebrew Heights himself.
He lived in Hebrew Heights.
Hand surgeons make a lot of money, especially back then.
Yeah, his hand surgeon, dad in the 80s, hand surgeon, drove a Porsche 928.
Yeah, there you go.
Tom was cool dude. He was great in the classroom, went off to UCLA, so on and so forth. And we, the white trash friends in the valley.
In the lowlands.
Yeah, we would. Our whole thing was we got to get up to Tom's house so we can get some food. His dad had a big screen TV, like the first, the kind that had the projector in the front.
Oh, yeah,
it looked like a spaceship, with the different colored the three colored bulbs in the front.
Yeah, man.
And we just sat there. We're like, oh, he's got a swimming pool. He's got that TV set.
But he's like from another planet to you guys. Like, you couldn't even, like, relate? How do you even?
Well, it was.
Did you wonder why he was with you guys?
He liked us. We're funny.
Oh.
He liked hosting these, events at his house. It was cool that he had a, big house and a swimming pool, and we'd go play around. Later on, he put a jacuzzi in. Oh, my God. Tub of water that shoots bubbles out of it. Oh, my God. And we knew he was black, but I wouldn't factor it in. He was the rich friend. And we'd go to Tom's house to eat. Tom had a car. I remember when we all drove to Tijuana one time.
He was part of that. Oh.
He was part of the group. We drove to Tijuana, and my sister's car, it's like 67 Dodge Dart that I borrowed, blew up halfway, two-thirds of the way down there.
Did his parents see him get picked up in that car?
Probably not.
No.
They
no way.
Came down. And he got, so the point is this, when that car blew up, we needed somebody, there were five people in that car, we needed a new car to continue our journey to Tijuana. We weren't going to turn around and head back our tails between our legs. And so thus, we needed somebody to not only bring us a new car, but a second car to drive that person home after they went to San Juan Capistrano and dropped off the new car. That was Tom. That was Tom's sister. That was Tom's new Toyota Celica. And that was Tom's mom, who followed them all, whatever. Now, he was the brother in the group, but his family was intact. And they had money. And his dad was a surgeon. And we were all poor trash. And nobody had a car and anything. So it was this thing where it's mostly about class. It's not really about tone or skin color.
Except that class thing doesn't work as well in prison, you're saying. That breaks down.
No, then you got to join. Then you need to join a gang.
Then you're color-coded. It's like, Daddy, how do I know which people to hate? Well, choose them by the color. Then
you need color-coded. You need protection because you're in the worst neighborhood on the planet. And if you're my writing partner, Kevin Hench, you have to get a tattoo of, I Love Hitler on your forehead because you're going to get killed by one of the other neighboring groups if you don't.
Wow. I think it's time now that you and I and Dr. Drew, we change that in prison. Let's make prison a friendlier place to be for all races. There's your problem with
prison. I agree. Start pumping in classical music.
Yep.
I think it'd mellow people out.
Get that going, because everybody gets mellowed. Classical music actually makes me mad. Like, this is real. If I'm driving and I have it on classical, and the more
the
speed picks up.
That's anxiety.
I'm not. Now
you're
like me. Now you made me the more anxious guy.
No, we're brethren. I feel you.
I start going with the rhythm of the music, and I'll find myself driving really fast and angry if I'm listening to a certain kind of
classical music. Well, no, you watch too many movies. and it sounds like a sound. If they start playing the theme from Gladiator, you're going to start driving harder.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's interesting. I like classical music, and my good friend Dennis Prager likes classical music, and he says the best stuff being composed now is for movies. And I never thought about it. Like, who's making new classical music?
Yeah,
he says the good stuff, the really good stuff, is just being made for these sweeping, epic sort of movies.
Because it's so emotionally driven.
Yeah, I mean, you think about any just Star Wars and stuff, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's where the greatest talents go because the greatest rewards are there.
Right.
Like anything else, right?
Right. Yeah, that's what it is. All right, Gary, by the way, LA Comedy Shorts Film Festival, and that is tonight, April 4th through Sunday, April 7th. What is in it in terms of making a short?
Yeah.
what is in it for the filmmaker? I mean,
yep.
Is it a calling card, a stepping stone? Is there money physically to be made from the short itself, or is it more just a step to the next and bigger plateau?
You're asking all the right questions, and you're doing it with the right vocal tone, by
Thank
the way.
You, Gary.
But, you know, shorts used to be, they used to be a calling card, but now you can actually make money doing shorts. Like, well, our festival people win cash prizes, but we also set them up with meetings, with production companies, with agents, with managers. But more importantly than that, there are all these people coming along like Amazon and iTunes. All kinds of folks are looking for short comedy content producers mm-hmm. and directors and writers, and like literally giving them jobs. People walk into our festival, meet other people there, and come out with jobs and TV shows and shows on the internet. You can make money doing it now.
I think like Workaholics on Comedy Central and people like that were doing that kind of internet-based shorter
Always
stuff.
Always Sunny in Philadelphia. That's how that
That stuff. So, and really, that's, you know, I've said it a million times. You show me, I never understood the pilot process, the ABC, NBC, CBS. Here, I've screwed up a few of them, but here's $2.3 million. Give us a half hour or 22-minute finished product that's shot over the course of weeks and all the writing and all the rewriting and stuff like that. I basically just said to somebody, you show me an 8-minute version of whatever you're thinking about, and if I ain't laughing by minute three,
that's probably it.
I don't know. It's like saying, make me a muffin and let me taste it. I don't need 200 muffins.
Right.
I don't need the whole muffin. I know if you can bake. If not, I mean, we do man show bits. They were 3 minutes long. They were either funny or they weren't. If somebody showed me one and it wasn't very funny, I'd go, all right, well, that guy's no good. I wouldn't go like, well, that particular one wasn't very good. I'd go that. And if you showed me one that was hysterical, I'd go, I want to work with that guy.
Yeah, you don't need a lot of time to know if something is good. And in that, I agree with you. Even you're talking about 8 minutes to show proof to me. Give me 5 minutes. If you can't hit me, like for a TV show, a sizzle for a TV show, if you can't hit me within 5 minutes and convince me these characters are sustainable and the shit's just funny, then don't even do it.
No, it's weird because I did it times two and plus with the network. You know, I did Top Gear pilot. That thing was an hour long. You know, traveling all over the country and blowing up cars and stuff like that, millions of dollars. And then I just said, I'd literally do, you know, like there's an animator named Michael Naren. He's illustrated a few things
the logo for the show. Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, he's illustrated stuff that, over our words.
Oh, yeah.
And you can see in these 3 minute little funny little videos. I'll get the one with David Alan Greer just to make Gary laugh.
There's one of those, by the way, in the festival. Just we'll go back and talk about. Yeah.
An animated thing?
There's two of them from you.
From
you
me?
Don't even know that. Yeah,
a Michael Naren
pieces of Carolla's pieces. Yeah, I have two animated pieces of
my
you
lawyer
the
on the blower.
No, don't worry about your lawyer.
Okay.
he can't answer his phone today, man. He's busy.
But think about the market efficiency.
I don't even know what it is.
But hang on a second, you fat cats, Adam. You're out of business. They throw $20 million a year at pilots. These guys go out for $1,000 and live out their fantasy. And by the way, in this phone is basically the equivalent of a technology that used to require an entire movie studio to recreate.
Yeah.
It's in my hand. And so people can just go do this, and if it's good, somebody will find it, and the market will play it out from there.
Well, we just make it easier for people to find. They just come there and see it.
Hold on a second, though. I did say – it's funny. I was saying, well, I did one pilot for NBC and one pilot for CBS, and there's $5 million out the window.
Wasted.
They'll never see the light of day. And then I said, I don't get why they wouldn't do just a little short animated. And then I ran into Fox, and Fox, a little bit smarter, they're like, all right, here's $500,000 to $700,000. Do an animatic.
Yeah.
Do a 9-minute version of this.
The MO in reality now is that here's no money.
Right.
That's how reality
you can,
is sold.
You can watch, you can look up Michael Naren, and you can go to our page. You want to check this out? This is me and David Alan Greer, Dr. Drew from Loveline. Now, we didn't know this was being animated.
Yeah, he did this. He pulled it and did this.
After the fact, yeah.
There's some of that sweeping music.
Yeah. This is the good kind of it.
Drew, yeah. When suitors start coming around wanting to
why
date
did we
your
jump
daughter,
forward?
Oh,
she was 10 more seconds.
What a nightmare. You know what would be really funny is if I got hold of the kid first. I put an IFB in his ear. We just put a little speaker thing in his ear. And Drew, he'd be coming in, and he'd be like, hey, Dr. Drew. And he'd be like, what's your GPA? None of your goddamn business, Poindexter. None of your goddamn. You be the kid.
How you doing, Dr. Drew? How you doing, Mr. Drew? I would like to prolapse the anus of your daughter. Where you going, man? What did I say?
No, Drew, you ask him, and I'll be
so
in
David,
his ear.
David, what are you studying now? Are you in high school or college?
Studying how to kick the white man's ass.
I'm studying how to kick the white man's ass.
That's very nice. What religious persuasion are you?
Why don't you quit pushing, honky?
I see. Did you finish high school?
You're going to give your daughter an eating disorder. You want to give me one, too?
What?
Huh? Let's break down on that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to give your daughter something to eat, huh?
Oh, wait. What did you say?
Let me get back to the group.
Meet me in the band.
That's hilarious, man.
Yeah, it's funny. And it was funny because it all just kind of improvised in real time. From back in the day.
It's good stuff.
Well, if you really watched the nuances of Dag in that, spoke to him yesterday, by the way, from the airport. He was in the San Francisco airport, and he had to hang up because his daughter was running away. That's all you need to know. if you look at that, I came up with this sort of concept of, I'm going to put an IFB in your ear, right, and you repeat what I say to Dr. Drew. And he got his stupid prolapse anus thing out, and then he got into the ear, and he started repeating it. But he did two where he repeated it, but then the third one was the joke one. That's when he fucked up. Because you couldn't just keep repeating what I'm saying. The joke would just kind of coast to a stop.
Right.
So we did one, two, like sort of set up, and then bam. With I'll give your daughter something to eat on.
Yes,
that's what he did. But he did this all in real time.
Yeah.
And then when he came back to the van, and I said, "Don't repeat what I'm saying," he immediately went in. What was
he had
going?
The IFB in his ear, as far as he was concerned. You know, he was actually playing
that out.
I'm
just saying, from an improvisational standpoint, that should be shown in shown at colleges as to here's how you jump in, and he knew where every joke was going. He knew where I was heading. I was yelling, don't say anything about the van. He was heading back to the van. He was yelling, headed back to the van. Like, it was all that.
Because you guys were both in that same world playing that game together, and that's good listening and good improv skills.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people with a sense of humor want to stand outside of that world and comment on it. And make jokes about it.
While they're in it?
Well, that's you're not in it.
No, I'm not saying, but that's
well,
their conceit.
Well, no, yeah. You can't stand next to...
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, sometimes people I work with, don't stand next to the conversation and make comments about it.
Yeah.
Jump into the conversation.
Yeah.
And I've always said, that's why Drew's good, because Drew doesn't think. He knows he's not funny. He knows he's not entertaining. He knows nobody likes him. No, he has to be engaged in the conversation because that's what he does.
Yeah.
Comedians are going,
What's the joke?
What's the joke?
Especially stand-up. Stand-ups are always thinking, what's the joke? Where do I get my punchline or my pre-written thing? And the improv guys kind of go along with everything.
But you expect me to know where your jokes are, and I try.
No.
And sometimes I know, but a lot of times I don't know. It's all step on it with a conversation.
No. You do know. You know too well. Your problem is you're so daft when it comes to humor, to understanding humor, that when I'm trying to set something up, you jump to the conclusion and step on it, which is semi-retarded for a guy who's been doing this as long as you've been doing this. Like, I'll do this thing where I'll go like, well, it's weird. It's like, it's a nervous thing.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to help me. But it's the kind of thing where I'll go, it's a funny story. I was complaining to my wife all week about putting her keys in the same place and not forgetting her keys. And then I went out to the car, and guess who locked? You did. You locked yourself out. Yes. Yes, it was me. But thanks for... Why jump in?
Maybe he's just playing for the edit, though. He's like, we're not going to have time for this whole bit. No. Let's just get to the good stuff. Let me help you
he
out.
He has
here.
A weird Tourette's with that.
Well, I feel like part of my job is to keep the momentum jumping forward, and I usually am pretty good at that, but occasionally if I don't anticipate where you're going, which is what you're complaining about, which is true, because I don't see it. I just don't see it.
No, you,
I jump on it, and it's like, oh, I'm trying.
No, it's an uncomfortable in your own skin
part of
moment.
It's that. For sure.
You have to help the person.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like when people...
That's why it happens, but the what is happening is a little more cognitive.
I'll tell you one thing you do, Drew. Yeah. I'll give you a couple uncomfortable in your own skin
things.
I'm going to cross my fingers.
This is the anxiety thing again.
Dr. Drew.
Thank you.
He, like, somebody will say every single time, if somebody says, I'm a huge fan, I was a huge fan of Loveline from back in the day, Drew will go, okay, but, and, now, tell me, what, you know, because you're expecting them to go, but now, you've changed, man, you're not as cool as you used to be. And I'll go, Drew, maybe they're just saying they're a huge fan. Don't do the, but, what, they're just giving you a compliment.
It's in the same category as the jumping on you, same zone,
emotionally. Yeah, that's what
I'm saying. It's also the same zone that has me not wanting to talk about myself or talk on stage when you – or I demean myself on stage assuming they won't want to hear from me, and then you get pissed at me. We went through that a couple of times, right?
Well, I'm just saying, don't go on stage and don't split the money then if you assume that people don't want to hear what you have to say. Right, stay home. All right. True.
I've learned a lot.
You have learned.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I was but here's how you have to – Drew, here's what you need to do.
Yeah, listening.
And
– dig.
Gary probably teach you some of this.
Yeah,
too.
Let me help.
Right.
Which is, first thing, when a comedian starts telling a story, when a comedian starts going down a road, assume it's going to end at a punchline because it's a comedian. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When your wife does it or a politician does it, don't assume it's going to end there. But when a comedian starts to go down that road, assume it's going to be there. And I'll give you an example. I was in a cab. No, I was in a van with Penn Jillette. And we were doing like Celebrity Apprentice, whatever week, and they put everyone in the van. And Penn Jillette and I were staying in the same hotel. Van picked us up about 8 a.m. to take us to Trump Tower or whatever. And Penn Jillette, who's always holding court, was holding court in the van of six or seven celebrities. And he said, I was on the subway this morning and a woman sat next to me. And my first impulse was I ate dinner with him. We were up. Sort of having dinner that night or at the same restaurant last night till 10:30, whatever. And he was getting up at 7 early. And on my first impulse, I knew where he was last night. I knew what hotel. We stayed at the same hotel and stuff. And I was thinking, why were you on a subway? Where were you going this morning? Not to work out at 6:30 in the morning, Penn Jillette. Where were you going on a subway? Nothing's open. Where were you going? No museums or anything. And I started to go, where were you going on the sub? And then I realized... He's telling a joke. That's his. I caught myself and went, he's telling a story that's going to end up with a punchline.
Right.
So I stifled myself. And sure enough, he ended up with a joke.
I get that.
That's Penn Jillette.
I get it.
And that's
and
me.
I get that. And I've learned to hold myself back. I think you would say I'm better. I am nowhere near perfect.
Uh-huh.
And because a lot of the time you and I are just engaged in conversation. And I don't realize, I don't pay attention to when you're going towards joke. And I need to pay more attention to that.
Well, if you would like the ultimate and you don't know what a comedian or when a comedian is making a joke.
Yeah.
Or the context of things. It's an interesting topic. Context. Meaning... I get my feet held to the fire because I'm up on stage doing a live comedy show.
Right.
And someone yells out, what do you think of Chaz Bono? And I make a joke that's not flattering to Chaz Bono.
Mm.
But I cannot, if somebody yells, what do you think of your mother-in-law? And I say, she's a wonderful, courageous individual, and I have much love and respect for the woman. You guys laughing? Anyone at the club laughing? But, if I have to say that old battle axe,
okay, but listen.
And then we're getting laughter. Hold on a second. Yeah. So context, context, context.
Okay, so we're in Salt Lake City, you and I. you start off with the talk about how they you observed some flags on the street corners, which story why we ought to share with this audience, by the way. It's pretty funny. But I'm not sure at the start of that conversation, am I in this? Is this a joke?
It's going to attempt at humor.
It's going to be maybe, interesting.
Maybe, Adam, you're too seamless in your comedy. Ooh. Have you thought of that?
Yeah.
Maybe
I can't be too seamless. Good. Yeah, I can't be helped.
Dude, for real, you may just be too brilliant in weaving regular life into comedic bits.
Well, I am pretty good at it, but then Drew knows it's coming or should know it's coming. But context. And I'll
give
you guys.
Well, let's go to the flags in Salt Lake City. You start with an interesting observation. I want to engage in that conversation.
That's fine. You were fine with it.
But when
but
I engage.
But you did jump the. I think you jumped the.
Yes, because now I'm in conversation. I forget that there's a joke coming. So I have to really have an observing
well, how
sort
did
of,
you jump the ship on? How did
I think I almost jumped on the homeless thing where you talked about what the homeless people would do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a. It was. I've noticed that in Salt Lake City. And Kirkland, Washington are the only two other places outside of Seattle where they have flags
there.
For crossing the street, which from L.A. is
bizarre.
The city that has barbed wire around every freeway sign. This means I just look for indicators like why you should move to this city.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when people go, our standardized testing is 10% higher in math and social studies. I'm like, I don't give a fuck about that. Show me those flags.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll get me there. That'll let me know that you have a city that has no problems with people that return things when they walk to the other side of the street and so on and so forth. I don't look for, you know, the major indications. I don't want to see some Forbes report with the Fortune 500 or anything. Show me flags for crossing the street. I'll show you a city without a problem that I need to go to.
And you went from that, and I now start jumping in, but you were building to the homeless guy. And I missed that.
That's all right. You reminded me of a good thing, which was the rhino at the airport.
See,
talking
now,
about on the podcast.
But once again, your seamlessness. Yeah. Now, I would have thought Adam's got to be done after this flag bit. He can't go further.
Yeah.
It must be over.
Yeah.
But you've proven that there was another step. There was a homeless step to this thing.
Well, he said, because I thought it was very funny. He goes, if this were Los Angeles, a homeless person would take those flags, tie them together with dental floss and fashion a coat out of it.
Yeah.
I was like, that was funny.
Well, I didn't say coat. It was funny.
Well, whatever. Whatever was just funnier. And it was jumpsuit, right?
Yeah. A waterproof jumpsuit. You'd see guys walking around in orange jumpsuits that were made together with dental floss.
I mean, kids have stolen my sprinkler heads off of my front lawn.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I know they would take one of those. Right. Why wouldn't you take that flag?
Listen, you'd take it just on lack of principle.
Yeah.
If you lived in L.A., meaning I don't want to take this thing that's not chained down like a pen at a bank, but I must.
Yeah.
I live in L.A., and it's not attached to anything, and there's nobody standing there with a flashlight and a gun telling me I can't do it.
No razor wire around
it. No razor wire around it.
I would take them and replace it with a different type of flag on the other side. I'd replace it with a gay flag or a rebel flag on the other side.
Ooh. Mix it up.
I would take one, but I would leave one. That's how I always do in life.
Wow.
Gary, I think you're onto something here, which is I would, as the city, provide you could do the Jewish star.
No, yeah,
your gay flag.
Yes, your own sort of novelty flag.
Rebel flag. Yeah. And then
express yourself.
And let the drivers decide who they wanted to kill that Jew boy.
That is a point.
That would cause trouble for the there'd literally be gay bashing. That would
literally
bashing.
Because you're waving the gay flag.
Right. But no, maybe different neighborhoods. Fairfax could have the Jewish flag and, you know, Santa Monica over there could have the gay flag. You know, just pick your flag. I like that.
It's good.
That's smooth.
And say something about the town you're in, too.
Yeah.
It'd be a tell.
Be proud.
I was recently reminded in my beautiful neighborhood of Sherman Oaks that I wasn't in Inglewood, a lady told me one day.
Wow.
Why?
I was backing out of my driveway, and I didn't see her. And
that is the most assholish thing I've ever heard anybody say.
It really just – it made me want to go and break her windows in at night.
Yes. Was she a neighbor of yours?
She was. She lived up the street somewhere.
Gary.
Yeah. No, I'm dead serious. He's like, this isn't
Inglewood. I don't know how you smile at that shit. At the time,
I just thought, once again, I didn't want to go to prison and have to choose a group.
Yeah.
That's what you think. No, that's what you've been thinking.
It's easy for you. Crip or blood.
It's not that easy, though, because there aren't any Crips and Bloods in my neighborhood.
No, prison.
I know, but in prison.
Prison will be fine.
I know, but I don't know which Crip or Blood.
Well, listen.
Red and blue.
You have the coin. It's red on one side. It's blue on the other. You flip it. And that's how what works in prison.
I'm going to be the dude who paints himself half red down one side and blue down the other. I'm about to unite some shit. You don't understand, Adam. Some shit's about to get united up in the federal penitentiary.
Yeah, you knifed is what's going to happen. Yeah, I'm sad that that neighbor said that to you. This isn't Inglewood.
The one good thing about it is to know that not everybody's that way. My mother said long ago, you can't change everybody. You know, those are things. It's like some people are old and stupid, and you're not going to change them no matter what.
Well, can I make this observation as well?
Yes.
There are people that are racist, and then there are people that are attempting to insult people as quickly as they possibly can.
Yeah.
So let's say.
Isn't there an overlap in those two groups?
Yep.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is there's a large group of people that are, look, I mean, you get cut off by a fat guy and it's, hey, fat ass, watch the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, you may have friends and family that are fat. You may not have anything against fat people, but you're looking for the first thing that you can grab physically. Baldy, bucktooth, brillo head, whatever
kind of
comes
shit
out of their mouth.
Yeah.
I become immediately pussy, bleeding heart all the way in myself.
What I would call you.
Hey, pussy bleeding heart.
You know what I mean? Try to make fun of your frames, maybe. There's nothing good for Drew to really hang your hat on.
Because to me, it's so revealing. It's like,
But she didn't just go, hey, man, you're black. She took it. She took it to a neighborhood.
Wild black
this
man. You're wild, out of control black man.
Right. No,
the
but I know.
Because apparently people are always backing up without looking in Inglewood. Like, fuck, is that a problem? I gotta watch out when I'm in Inglewood. I will carry my flag in Inglewood. Like, don't back into me.
The spinners on the Denali is probably what I call a tell.
I gotta have my spinners.
Know,
when my car stops moving, I don't want to stop moving.
I know, but you're asking. You're really asking for more of that behavior from neighbors.
Right? I put spinners on my kids' tennis shoes, man. Well, I'm about spinners, Adam.
Well, speaking about kids, you guys' kids are in the same school, right?
They were.
They were
in the same school.
They were.
How was Adam received by the parent community at the school?
Loved.
What? Like Lynette. They're being nice to him because they love Lynette.
They would bake breads for him.
Mm. Again, they love Lynette.
Drew.
They're trying to appease him.
Powerful.
Keep quiet.
Hold on.
What?
Gary.
What?
Drew.
What?
Dave. You guys are like a domino. You're the whitest and the blackest, all but together. You know what I mean?
I know.
Honestly,
yeah, we're mashup. We're both anxious.
Maybe Gary knows something about this, but dig.
Dig.
Just dig. And I can help. I think I can help heal this city. Mm-hmm. I was at one of the school functions. It was a bake sale or something that I was
the breads for Adam again.
Mm-hmm. I was auctioning off something. I think they got me into being the auctioneer at the bake sale.
Right. You mean you just walk in and start auctioning? They actually got you into it.
They got me.
They pulled him in.
Gary was dressed up like a sharecropper, walking around. I don't know what that outfit was called. I don't have a non-racist name or whatever that was.
I don't think sharecropper is racist, but go ahead.
All right. Huck Finn sort of character. put that one.
A piece of wheat sticking out
of
his mouth.
Pretty close.
Let's go back to sharecropper.
Okay. So I'm up there doing my thing, and a guy, kind of light-skinned brother named Chip.
Yeah.
You know Chip?
Chip Matthews.
Chip. Yeah. You know Chip. Okay. I didn't follow Chip too closely, but Chip comes up to me and he goes, or maybe I come up to Chip. I mean, I recognized him. I go, hey, man. Hey, Chip. He says, hey, man. I said, you know, Chip, we worked together many years ago doing earthquake rehab work for the city of Los Angeles.
And he was
like, oh, yeah. And I said, you know, I gave you one of my tool bags, because he didn't own tool bags. And he said, yeah. He put it on a dress belt.
Huh.
He literally took a tool bag. It was an electrician's tool bag.
Yeah.
I remember it had a little bit different than a carpenter's tool bag, leather, slid it through like a Gucci belt. And I said, what are you doing now, Chip? And he said, I'm an attorney, I think. I believe he's an attorney. You're nodding yes, Gary.
Yes, right. All these things are true so far.
Right. And so I was like, man. And I said, ever talked to any of the old guys or whatever? And we have discussion. You know,
we should get him in.
I brought
here.
Up some names. We should.
Yeah.
And I said, you talk to Jeff or any of the old guys? And he said, oh, fuck that guy, man. That guy's a racist. And I said, no, Jeff's a cool guy. Jeff's not a racist. And he said, oh, yeah, he's a racist. And I said, why? How do you know? And he said, he was always a dick to me. And I said, oh.
He's always a dick to you, too, probably.
No, he was just that dude from Topanga.
Yeah.
And I said, Chip, you know why he was a dick to you the whole time? And he said, no, I don't. I said, well, how do you think you got that job working for the city? And he said, I just went in and applied. I said, I know, but you had no construction background, no history as a carpenter. He was a non-carpenter. He was a zero. I mean, it was actually sort of physically dangerous for him to do earthquake rehab, which is
kind of
healthy, like, dangerous. Yeah, it's scary work underneath buildings using roto hammers, things like that. I said, how do you think you got that job, Chip? And he said, I don't know. I showed up and I applied. I said, because you're black. And they needed – the city jobs needed to fill quotas. We had a woman working on – she didn't know anything. Chip didn't know anything. We had a bunch of people didn't know anything. And then there was, you know, me and Jeff Gaines who knew something because that was our business. We got on to it. We'd been doing that for a number of years beforehand. I said, the reason Jeff was a dick to you is because Jeff, his life's ambition was to be a fireman. And he put in, just like I did many years ago, an application to be an L.A. City firefighter, but they told him it'd be about an 8-year wait or a 10-year wait because they weren't hiring white guys. So he was volunteering with the Topanga Fire Department and doing all this, taking fire science classes at the junior college and training every weekend to be a fireman, except for he had to work this shitty construction gig for 10 years before they would let him be a fireman. So when he met you, you were the embodiment of what you got there making this. It was a high dollar job. The city job was like $19.50 an hour when we were all making $9 an hour because the city does. Here's why the city's broke. They paid the laborers more than they paid the carpenters, which on the job site is total insanity. The laborers get $7. The carpenters get $15, you know.
The other way around. Oh, is that, the laborers, more. Say it again.
On a job site, laborers get $7. Okay. Carpenters get $15.
Okay.
In the city, they pay the laborers more.
Yeah, got it.
I was made a laborer because I was the best carpenter.
Huh.
So I could, it was, everyone said, well, give Adam the extra $1.50. You don't want to give it to Chip. He doesn't know what he's doing. Make Adam
the laborer.
Yeah. So I could get paid, you know, $1.25 an hour more because the city hates money. Then you populate this job site with people who don't know anything about construction, but they have a certain color or a certain sex organ, or they're missing one.
Did he mistreat the woman too?
No, I don't believe he did, but I don't know. I'd have to talk to her. If I talked to her, she probably did.
Yeah.
So he was douchey to Chip. Chip had it better than all of us, because I remember he was going to college and he was working at a restaurant or something like that, and then he went on to be a lawyer. So it should be a socioeconomic thing, not a color of your skin thing. Oh, shut up. So the point, no, Chip. I talked to Chip. I liked Chip. I got along with Chip. I gave him my fucking tool bag. But I remember him saying, I go to such and such a college or whatever, or grad school or whatever. I'm going to be a lawyer. And I remember thinking, oh, you're doing pretty good for yourself. Everyone else is just bunked up in apartments in North Hollywood. So Jeff hated Chip because Chip stood for the system that was, shut up, fucking Jeff and helping, pushing Chip along. And Chip didn't need to be pushed along. And it was actually, he didn't deserve to be pushed along. He didn't have the experience that we had.
So if you really follow your logic, what your logic would say, what you're concluding from your discussion, is affirmative action fosters racism.
So it's not that it helps.
It's not that the guy's not a racist. The guy's still a racist, but it's affirmative action induced racism.
Well, first off, I wanted to be a firefighter and Jeff wanted to be a firefighter and we couldn't.
Listen, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that's what it helps, right?
No, I don't say it fosters racism. It fosters people resenting other people.
Race and sex.
Yeah, but specifically resented this person. I don't know. I don't feel like Jeff resented black people.
Right,
this
right.
guy represents. So right. it does foster some of that.
Right.
And it also, to me, it should all be socioeconomic, whatever your
well,
lowest.
This is what the Supreme Court's looking at right now, these very issues, right?
Yeah. Well, the biggest problem is it brings into question, if I was a black guy and I got into Harvard on my own merits, I wouldn't want to walk around campus having people thinking, ugh. Or American Indian. Do you know what I'm saying? Or whatever group they're looking for. If you're an American Indian guy and you're walking around Harvard, you know the white kids are going like, and the Asian kids are going like, really? Was his SAT score as high as mine? Or do they really want a guy who was part Cherokee here?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of this is my kid is black and white, and we get to decide what his race is every year.
Is your wife black?
My no, but
okay. No, sorry, yeah, I couldn't do that. I'm colorblind, Gary.
Yeah, I know.
I'm colorblind.
I know
you.
You don't see color.
I smell it. But
yeah,
I don't
you smell.
See it.
You like I can smell an engine a mile away.
Is that grape soda?
But you don't see them.
I smell something.
You know what? Blacks don't drink grape soda anymore. We're into orange now.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Mm. But my kid since Orangina, and I'm Italian. So, but my kid, we get to choose every year. He was white last year, and this year when he went to school, he's in public school. So we find out from his school they need more kids of color. So I told him this year, I was like, dude, you're black this year. He's like, all right. So like he gets to make that choice every. He looks like a black kid.
I have no problem with individuals.
Yeah, it's great.
The system set up for you. Go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, I'm using that system,
yeah.
man.
Why
we
not?
We need more
Why
kids
not?
Of color.
Whatever. It's like,
must have more kids of color.
But Adam, you're advocating classism. You're actually actively advocating for class distinction.
I know. I'm basically saying I was as poor as I could be and had parents that were very poor and would have made a hell of a fireman when I was 19.
But slow down. I don't think anybody's heard this about your family of origin. They're
right.
Losers?
I would like them to factor in the fact that I had no other alternatives and no safety net. There's a perceived, you know, it's in the fabric of our society, which is, oh, he's white, he'll land on his feet, he's got a network, he's my dad's around, he's going to take care of him. Not in my case. I didn't have that.
Well, so you're making a case for affirmative action for underclass, which is an interesting case.
Yeah, I'm saying,
right?
Well, no, here's what I want to say. If you want to be a fireman, first thing I want is the best fireman, especially when it's someone carrying your kid out of a building. Yeah. You don't want a diminutive woman carrying your child out of a building. So first is, give me the best. And when it comes to building and doing earthquake rehab, potentially dangerous work and potentially dangerous consequences if it's not done correctly, I want a good carpenter. I don't want a guy who's a lawyer now who's wearing a dress belt named Chip. And I like Chip. Chip was not a good carpenter.
Well, Chip will readily admit that that wasn't his thing. He just wanted to help the city. But the he'll tell you that. But the problem is white dudes in power tend to hire white dudes.
I don't believe that.
Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I did walk around your studio and saw all the Negroes hanging out here.
I didn't.
There's not. I'm the blackest thing ever stepped in here other than the curtain behind you, Adam. Yes. Let's not be crazy.
No, I think we – first off, when it comes to color, I think there are certain jobs – and certain professions that attract certain groups for reasons that probably go back further than we know. There's just certain groups, Asians, Hispanics, different jobs attract different groups.
Across time, per unit time.
Yeah.
It may change from one year to the next, decade to the next kind of thing.
Yeah. Number one. Number two, I never worked with any brothers. And
what do you mean?
Any black people.
What do you mean never work with them?
Never work construction. All the years I work construction. I work with just Mexicans. I never work with any Jews. They were doing something else. I never work with any Asians. They were doing something else.
Indian guys.
I never work with any of...
Asian Indians.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Asian or Asian Indian, anybody. I worked with white guys and Mexican guys because the brothers didn't want to do that kind of work. It's not that they weren't being hired, the guy who hired them don't have any. There's no difference between if you're a racist. There's no difference between black and Mexican to the guy who's doing the hiring. You're just someone who's different color than them and not them, in terms of. And they want to get the job done. They really do. Like even if they hate you, they want to get the job done.
Yeah.
The brothers did not want to do that work. They did not physically want to dig ditches. It felt like olden times to them. I suspect. I don't know what. The answer was, this is an L.A. thing. It's not an Atlanta thing. It's an L.A. thing.
Please speak up.
Ask a brother. I will tell you that, like you said, not an L.A. thing, not an Atlanta thing. My daddy grew up doing construction.
I know. Atlanta,
so did a bunch of his
there's
friends.
There's crews. Black right. crews.
But when you said that about if you're white, you'll hire black or Mexican, it doesn't matter. That's just to say that there's no gradients of racism, and there is. Like, racists think, oh, okay, well, he's Asian, but Asians are smart. Blacks are lazy, or Mexicans are this.
Whatever, that's
they
all.
Do
that's,
have,
but it's all
they
racism.
Do have that. It's all racism. Yeah.
Well, it's not racism. It's earned.
Okay. Let's just agree.
You love your kid very much, right?
Yes.
He's being looked at right now medically.
Yes.
If he was to travel, if he was on vacation.
Yes.
And he was to break down physically, have a appendicitis.
Yes.
Would you rather it be in Mexico or Germany?
We had something like that happen in Spain with him, same kid. I treated him myself.
Mexico or Germany? All right,
Germany.
Spain.
Germany.
Why Germany? Because you're racist?
Well.
Why not Mexico? You don't think there's fine Mexican doctors?
Right.
Well,
Is better in Germany. That's the bottom line.
Why is the system better?
Because, I don't know. Must be all those Germans.
Okay, well, what? So you picked Germany.
Yeah.
So you're racist.
I'm not saying
you're judging.
I'm not saying there's not a difference in people. Obviously, not everybody is the exact same, but you can't tell, unless you're just one of the good ones, Adam, you can't tell me that there aren't white dudes out there who would prefer to hire a white dude before they look at other people.
Well, there's black dudes who would prefer to hire black dudes.
I never said there wasn't. I'm not saying
there's
not a flip
there's
side of it.
Some of that out there, but it's mainly merit-based.
Well, okay. Hang on a second. Maybe that's comfort-based because people feel like more comfortable around the certain people. They have a common heritage or common understanding.
Once
whatever.
Again, I'm going to unite.
But that's racism, though, right?
But listen, Drew. There was a study someone tweeted to me, I asked them to retweet it to me. I haven't found it yet, but it said bank lend to lowest blacks. They get the least. And then whites are above blacks.
Do you know the highest is?
Asian. All right.
I talked to a guy, a bank lender, who said it was Mexicans.
Well, not according to this article. Right, but the point is this. Banks want to make money. And they want to make their money back. When they give you $100,000 or $500,000 for a house, they want it back. Now, they may be racist. I don't know. But their first priority is getting paid back. So white bank owner is going to give to Asian who has higher FICO score than white guy who has lower FICO score or black guy who has lower FICO score in that order. Now, maybe he'd like to give it to the white guy more because he looks more like him. But ultimately, when it comes to business, he'll give it to the Asian guy who looks nothing like him and his granddaddy bombed Pearl Harbor because his FICO score's higher.
Now if they're looking at FICO scores, it's one thing. But there was one store, and I don't know if I can name it, who used to judge people when they walked in the door. They
would go a loan officer.
Yeah. It was a store where you and I would go buy electronics.
Right. Right.
And their whole setup was, if this guy walks in the door and he looks like this, they gave him a name. That guy is a Charlie. You can sell to that guy. Yeah, right. If that guy walks in, that guy is an Adam. They would literally have code names for them. Huh. Don't sell to that guy. They don't know this guy's FICO score. Yeah.
No,
FICO score. They don't know anything about that.
That's a group. Yeah. That's a group earned profile. Yeah. But it's still earned. It's earned.
Listen, man. I've been rich and I've been poor. If I go, I will say that. If I go into a bank, nobody treats me. When they see how much money I have in the bank, then color's off.
Yeah, right.
That doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
No, but until that moment.
My thing is for my domino friends over here.
The two of us?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Is black people.
I have my back to Adam right now.
Black.
I have none of this.
Drew.
What?
You're a doctor, so don't you like statistics?
Love them.
Okay. Black men, young black men, create or perpetrate a disproportionately high number of crime, especially violent crime. Yes? Yes or no?
Before the true answer to that, and I'm going to let you go on, is you got to ask why. But let's forget the why and keep going.
I don't have to ask why if I'm driving a cab. If I'm a guy from Croatia who's driving a cab.
Then I don't have to ask why when I'm backing out of my garage, my driveway, right. And some lady throws racism in my face for backing up.
But here's
That's
what
stupid.
I'm saying.
That's stupid of her and stupid
I'll finish
of the cab
my point.
Driver.
The guy's driving the cab driver who could be from Africa. And most of cab drivers are from somewhere other than Kentucky. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you've gotten a cab. I haven't gotten a guy who's spoken clear English in a cab in a million years. Now, he's driving down the street, and he sees an Asian woman on one side of the street and a 19-year-old black guy on the other side of the street, and they're both hailing the cab. Well, where's he going? He's picking up the Asian woman. Statistically, he is, because statistically, it's a higher likelihood. Statistically, not this one guy. This guy could be our friend Chip. But I'm saying, statistically, it's higher, and that's what he's going to do it. You want to change that cab driver, you got to change the statistics. That'll change him. You can't educate him.
Yeah, but, well, that's not true. You can't educate people.
Well, you can tell him all you want, pick up the black guy, but he's not going to do it until the statistics change.
You pick up the black guy and nothing happens to you bad and you get a good tip, then what?
Well, hopefully you've changed that guy around, but statistically, as long as things are the way they are, he's still going to pick up the Asian woman.
And statistically, changes will never happen if you keep doing that. You keep doing the same
thing. Statistically, you can change things statistically.
Well, statistically. You keep doing the same action. Right. You're going to keep getting that same result.
You keep ostracizing the black guy. Yeah.
No. Man, look, I have a class called I Want to Be Black Like Gary. Adam, I invite you to that class.
I'd like to go. No, listen, I'm saying it's the other way around. Change the prison populace. Change the violence, the culture, and the violence, and then you'll get that guy picked up.
I think you change it all.
Well, yeah, you change it all.
I think you change it all at the same time. I don't think you're going to change something from the outside to fix the inside or the inside to fix. I think you got to attack. You got to attack on all. I'll show you how to fight wars.
All right. Listen.
There's a lot we're going to learn together.
And by the way, I would argue that affirmative action worked. I would argue that. Right. That it was a good thing.
Tell Chip and Jeff. Go to meeting. You want to argue over the PC, over your computer?
I'm sorry. I was listening.
Go to meeting. Quiet. With HE Faces, brought to you by Citrix. Makes it easy for the entire team. Whatever the color, man.
Oh.
You like that?
Yeah.
I'm extending the olive branch to you. You can share the screen. You get on the same page. Just use this. I just had a meeting with a client, and we used GoToMeeting. It's weird when you're having meetings with clients using the technology from other clients, such as, that's a Kuna Matata, my friend, such as our good friends over at GoToMeeting. You can use your iPad, you can use your smartphone, you can use your tablet. Start hosting face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting free, 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code Adam. All right, I want to give, by the way, I still haven't found out what shorts I'm in that's on that.
Oh, yeah. Jash, do you know those guys?
Yes.
Yeah, they
yes.
have one. They have one of the shorts with you there on the opening night, celebrity night.
Now I got to see which one it is.
It's really funny, dude.
Tonight, by the way, April 4th through Sunday, April 7th, LA Comedy Shorts Film Festival, Gary Anthony Williams. Tickets and information at lacomedyshorts.com, and the website is lacomedyshorts.com. All right, me and Drew, Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, Saturday, April 13th. You get a free glass of, sit down there, Gary, white mangria.
Oh, damn. Son of a bitch.
You want to support the show? How about it? How about it you support us by clicking on our PayPal button and our site and giving a little bit of love to the great doctor and myself. And, what, Gary? Huh? Oh, Gary bought, you bought? Case of Mangria for the festival?
Yeah, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we're going to be serving on closing night. Wayne Brady will be hosting, and we're giving an award to Key and Peele, and we will be serving Mangria there, but to help the Pancreatic Cancer Society. Mm. My dad died of it. That sucked. It's a horrible disease.
Terrible illness, yeah.
Yeah, and my partner, Jeannie, her dad is suffering from it right now. He just got diagnosed.
That's crazy.
He's actually doing really well.
But to have both dads with it is crazy.
Yeah, he's doing well, which is a good thing. But we're donating money from that night to the pancreatic cancer. Yeah, we're big-hearted. And we're the least racist festival in the world.
Thank you, Gary.
Why'd you come here and talk to this guy?
Oh, please. I'm trying to fucking solve some problems here, Drew, pussy.
I think you cured it.
Don't be a puss.
It's over.
All right. I talked to Dag yesterday. Did I mention that? So, until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Gary Anthony Williams and Dr. Drew, Chris Maxipata, and Gary Haftard saying mahalo.
This is Carolla Digital.